All right, Peter. So, big press briefing yesterday. Tell us a little bit about the excitement around Xbox 360 in Japan.
Well, I think, you know, the interesting thing, certainly the years that we've been, quite frankly, focusing on this market and struggling a little bit, as I think is well known, yesterday seemed, it was cathartic for me and the team on the ground here, because we're starting to now see validation of all of the efforts that we put into really addressing the issues in this market that we have, looking at the overall challenges of the content piece that I don't think up until this year we've done a fabulous job in addressing, and that is really specific content for the Japanese gamer. And the bets that we placed with people like Sakaguchi-san in particular, I think as evidenced by the reaction yesterday with both Lost Odyssey and Blue Dragon, really seemed to be on the brink of paying off. So I feel good for the team on the ground here. Now, my reaction was, I went to, you know, when Sensui-san and I had finished on stage, I kind of said to him, you know what, with the pricing of the core bundle for Blue Dragon being at 28,000 yen, with having Blue Dragon ready to go on the 7th of December, and as beautiful a game as that looks, with the innovation of the HD DVD player and that being brought to market here, and with the 100,000 units that Sony said it's going to ship into the marketplace, I feel like I said to I don't know what else we need to do at this point to be successful in this market.
Yeah, I mean, the games that we showed yesterday were pretty extraordinary. Blue Dragon alone, there was about a 15 or 20 minute demo that the creator himself did.
Yeah, exactly.
And it looked phenomenal. What do you tell to someone who's sitting back in North America, say, right now, and looks at that and goes, they don't understand it? Yeah.
Well, you know, in some instances, it goes back to my original comment that we needed to focus on games that, quite frankly, maybe Western gamers don't understand, but Japanese gamers love. There is, both in that game and most definitely in that game and a little bit in Lost Odyssey, you saw what really is exciting to a Japanese gamer, which is a strategic type of game. When you saw it's a turn-based RPG, obviously, so you saw what our character heroes had to do against the boss characters. It's more than the usual real-time action-adventure stuff that we in the West love. There was the decision-making, the Sakaguchi. Actually, was struggling. I don't know if you noticed.
Yeah.
Because that's a tough boss character in that particular level. But he kept pounding away and was making decisions that weren't quite optimal to get past that boss character. And that's the beauty of the game.
Yeah.
And I think he said out loud, be careful when you play this at TGS because you can die pretty easy.
Yeah, he did. He said that.
So, but I think that was proof positive to me that it's not necessarily something we should understand or say, that's the type of game I can't wait to play.
Right.
I think you could see that, and certainly I talked to many members of the Japanese press last night. I did about 3 hours of interviews post the press conference, and they all said, Blue Dragon is exactly what you're going to need to do to be able to capture the hearts and minds of the Japanese gamers.
Yeah, it's really come a long way. I saw a little bit of it at TGS last year, and then, of course, you know, now it's so much closer to being done, and it's going to be shipping. It looks fantastic. I want to ask you about four characters. 1080p.
That sounds like five, actually.
1080p. Five, yes. let's talk about 1080p.
Yeah. Well, you know, we made the announcement yesterday that as part of the fall update that will be, as we constantly evolve the box and the experience in the box, that we'll be able to provide 1080p for both games and movies, should the consumer determine that that's what they want to do. And I think that the reaction we got to that was incredibly positive, and it just seems to be something that, you know, we feel there's, for some consumers, they want to take advantage of that. It's a very small number of consumers.
But they're very loud.
They're very loud, and they wanted it, and clearly our competitor has said, you know, it's the true high-definition format.
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, great.
Next.
We got it.
Exactly. That's kind of what the boards are buzzing with today, is that, it was kind of an ace up the sleeve.
Yeah. You know, it's tough when it's being translated from the Japanese into the English. I'm not quite sure whether everybody fully understands, but, you know, the ability for us as a software company to be able to continually evolve the capabilities of the platform, and in particular what we can do through Xbox Live, you know, that's proof positive. Okay, you want 1080p?
Yeah.
Here it is.
So you and I are sitting here in Japan. You know, TGS kicks off tomorrow. We're miles away from our respective homes, yet Bringing It Home is happening.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
So we talked a lot, and this really started with the work we did at E3.
Yep.
We sat down, I want to think it was in January and February, and we saw a marketplace really starting to take off. And while we were still a little bit, you know, we said it's still clunky. You know, it's difficult to find stuff and what have you. And we've made big improvements, the spring update in particular, for the navigation of content. And now we're at 1,500 pieces of content. Well, we better figure out how to navigate that and get our menus right. And I think we're making a lot of progress in that area. We thought this incredible relationship we have with folks on Xbox Live, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, we can deliver them things that are of interest to them. And we've always been about breaking down the barriers of, regardless, we're in Japan, but, you know, we can, you know, experience things that are going on next week in Barcelona, which will be part of XO6, and I'm sure we're going to talk about that. But Amy Blair and the team in particular there decided that we wanted to be able to bring it home.
Yeah.
And E3 was the first real venture. We combined that with a free gold week, if you recall, which was Verizon here in there in the U.S. and Adidas in Europe, I believe. And that really captured the imagination. And people loved, of course, we had that little thing called the Halo 3 trailer that brought the servers down as people were gushing over that. Since then, we've been able to bring these experiences, these events, to gamers around the world, regardless of whether they're in the country or on the continent or wherever. As long as they're connected to Xbox Live, we've made a commitment to bring these experiences home to them through whatever assets we have available, videos, of course, downloadable demos from E3, and we'll continue to do that. I think it's our obligation to utilize this incredible relationship we're building in the community to provide them the information in real time, and that's what we're doing.
So I have three words for you. Do, do, do.
Yeah.
that was a very infectious song from the briefing yesterday.
Yeah, and you should actually link to, and if you haven't done this, to the Tokyo, which is the boy band.
Right.
Video.
Right.
And if you haven't got that link,
will put that up.
Yeah, because it's a music video.
Okay.
And unfortunately, as soon as you see it and hear it, and you'll start doing this, because it's kind of that, I hate to say, bubblegum kind of pop thing.
It's catchy.
But it's very catchy.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of the effort that we've tried to do here in the last 12 months to feel more, quite frankly, like a Japanese company.
Yeah.
And we looked at, you know, change. When we launched it, we had the Rolling Stones.
Right.
Jumpin' Jack Flash. And while mid-60s English rockers may be of interest to you and I, or certainly me, we also looked at the fact that, quite frankly, it wasn't resonating as well as we would have liked with the demographic we need to talk to here. So Tokyo is KIO,
right,
is a very popular band here on a par with, you know, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys at their peak.
Right.
We sat down with them, they're gamers, and we got this great music video, which by the time folks see this, hopefully you've got the link in there, and really tried to look at the brand in a different way, a brand of fun and community, and the do-do-do element of do games, do choice, do live was tied into the whole thing. So it felt, even though I think you and I as Westerners don't quite understand where it's at,
right,
it felt, when I talked to Japanese folks about whether they got it, the Japanese press certainly understood the do-do-do concept of marketing integration.
Yeah, no, I had just gotten over the infectious Viva Pinata song. Yeah. I got that out of my head, and now I got this one in my head. So it is certainly catchy.
Yeah.
So we're going to wrap it up, but before I let you go, I want to talk about the next 72 hours of your life.
Yeah.
Let's talk about where you're going and what you're doing.
Well, this afternoon I'm going to, you know, we take very seriously our relationships with the Japanese publishers, so we're going to see some of our good friends in the Japanese publishing community.
Yeah.
And George Peckham is in town, and George is the head of third party, and I will go with our great team here, and we'll go say hi to some of our Japanese publishing community friends here in Tokyo. Tomorrow we'll move, and then tonight we move over to Makuhari, where the Tokyo Game Show is. Tomorrow we'll be on the ground there and talking to the press again and talking to the Japanese community that has been very loyal to Xbox.
Yes, they have.
Tomorrow night I'll jump on a plane at Narita and fly to Hong Kong and then run like heck through the airport because I got a 50-minute transition to a flight to New Delhi. I'm very excited to arrive in New Delhi on early Saturday morning, and we're launching in India, which has huge potential for us for the marketplace. And we'll be in New Delhi for 24 hours.
You're in New Delhi for 24 hours.
Yeah, and then so it's one of those ugly trips where you arrive at 2 a.m., you work all day, and then you leave at 2 a.m. and off to Frankfurt, and then transition to Barcelona. And then, we got a lot of stuff going to...
Yeah, I'll see you in Barcelona.
Yeah, for XO6, so we're prepping for that. And then Then I come back. I don't come home from there either. I go to Dallas where we're addressing the EB and GameStop managers meetings.
Wow.
In Dallas. So I'm also really looking forward to what is typically a 4,000 plus crowd.
Right.
Of some of obviously the most passionate and educated folks in our industry, which are the guys and gals that work in the specialty stores.
Well, you have a different, but you have such a different, they really look up to you because of your Dreamcast roots. You know, a lot of these guys and girls started with the Dreamcast,
yeah.
So you've got some history with them. And do they bring that up to you?
It's fascinating. I still get, people will still recognize me, walking down the street or wherever. And I've never met anybody yet, and I think I've told you this before, that ever regretted buying a Dreamcast.
Right.
Whether they bought it $199 or $99.99,
right.
or whether they were fortunate enough to buy it for $49 as the hardware was moving out of the retail stores, and whether it's every now and again you'll pull it out to play Soul Calibur or Sonic or some of the original sports games, the NFL 2K games and what have you. There are still fond memories, and of course trying to have an online game experience at 28K through a dial-up modem, but somehow
we did it,
and. People really look at the Dreamcast as the console that started to move the next generation into a connected world.
Right.
And I still got mine at home. And it's funny, I was just cleaning some stuff out the other day, and I found a bottle of wine that Okawa-san, who was the late chairman of Sega, of CSK here in Japan, that had commissioned with Robert Mondavi, and it's a Dreamcast. It's etched with the Dreamcast logo on the back.
I must see this. You must bring it.
I'll bring it into the
office. I would love to take a photo of that.
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'll cherish.
Yeah.
I've still got, in fact, in my office, and my wife will tell you this, I've got a kind of bunch of cabinets in my office at home.
Sure.
And I have my little Dreamcast shrine.
Yes.
A Dreamcast. I've got a Seaman edition Dreamcast. I've got a Hello Kitty Dreamcast. Still, that could be the my college fund for my youngest kid.
Yeah, when you sell that one out.
Yeah, it's still in its seal. And I've got a Resident Evil Dreamcast in kind of bright
red.
You
must have all that stuff.
Yeah, I've got, and it's just, it was an important part of my life at that time. Yeah. And it's still a moment of sadness when you think about what could have been. But I think, I like to think that the Dreamcast moved things forward and did its bit.
Right.
For the business, even though ultimately, if you gauge success by still being alive in a large installed base, it didn't fulfill the dream that the talented people that built the device was. But it debuted with a dial-up modem, and then we moved to broadband, I think, with Quake 3, if I remember rightly, with the infamous broadband adapter. So and every time I come back to Japan, and tomorrow I'll go by the Sega booth and see what's cooking there.
Say hello.
A lot of fond memories of those days, and a lot of water went under the bridge in those couple of years of really driving hard, trying to make a difference, and then realizing it wasn't going to work out, and transitioning Sega to be a third-party company.
So before I let you go, last year we were at TGS and you told me this story. Tell me about when you ran into Ken Kutaragi last year.
So we're in the reception, which is there's a reception that SESA, which is the organizing body here in Japan, that runs. As ESA does the late E3, does TGS here. And Kutaragi-san was very gracious and recognized myself and Robbie Bach were there. And, of course, a couple of gaijin in a room full of Japanese and just stood there. And Kutaragi-san, our eyes kind of met, and he came over and was very gracious, and we chatted a little bit. And he said, you must come over to our booth and see, I think it was the Metal Gear Solid.
That's right, that was the big one.
And come see my video. And, of course, my response was, you need to come to our booth and actually play some games. And I think he took it in good stead, but it was too easy not to jump in and give him that. So, and of course, you're going to be there tomorrow and see.
We'll see him tomorrow.
My PR folks won't let me go because they don't want me to be seen there. So.
We'll get you in disguise. Anyway, Peter, I appreciate you giving us a little bit of time.
Pleasure.
And good luck, and we'll see you in Amsterdam. Or we're not in Amsterdam.
No,
we're
going to
see
you.
That was last year.
In the wrong place.
We'll see you in Barcelona.
We'll be in Barcelona, and I get there. I think you get there on either Monday or something. I'll be there just ahead of you. So we're excited, and boy, if they thought a lot of stuff came out of TGS, there's going to be a ton of stuff coming out of Barcelona.
Thank you.
Okay, my pleasure.